And on Life Matters, do you struggle with official documents, certainly legal documents? Have you read something produced by the bureaucracy and just noticed it has that unique public service flavour about it? Well, is it arcane and wordy language in the law that really gets your goat, or is it the management doublespeak in business? And is none of it necessary? Well, it isn't, according to the plain language movement, those who advocate the use of plain English in every circumstance. And in fact, there's a plain English conference in Sydney underway, and it's because of that that we can welcome one of the international leaders of the movement, and it is a movement, Professor Joe Kimball, the chair of the Department of Research and Writing at the Thomas M. Cooley Law School in Michigan, also author of Lifting the Fog on Legalese, Essays on Plain Language. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Australia.
Thank you very much.
Well, what is plain language and why don't people use it?
Well, plain language is language, communication that is clear and readily understandable to its intended readers. And why don't more business leaders and government leaders use plain language? They lack either the will to do it or the skill to do it. it's harder than it looks.
Well, give me some examples of language that isn't plain.
Well, just about anything that comes out of business, government, and law. Financial documents, insurance policies, probably any notice that you get from the government or from your lawyer. I mean, try to read your will. Try to read your lease. Try to read any kind of official public communication. It's a real challenge, and it drives people crazy.
In your field, the law, isn't there a reason for that complex, arcane language? Doesn't it relate to our legal traditions? Or
well, it does certainly relate to legal traditions, but it's a very poor tradition, and it's been going on for four centuries now. And lawyers have been criticized, rightly so, for the way they write and speak. Most of the public thinks that they speak funny, and they do. And is it necessary? Absolutely not.
But they speak to judges who can understand it anyway, and they speak to juries, and if the juries don't understand it, well, they're doing a client the disservice, and that'll work itself out in the end when presumably people will be attracted to plain-speaking lawyers. So why the intervention?
The intervention is because you mentioned juries. Juries don't understand jury instructions. It's an amazing thing. I'm not sure whether you have jury instructions in Australia. Yes.
This is when the judge instructs a jury.
The judge instructs a jury on the law that they're supposed to apply, and there's studies out there. It's absolutely incredible. They don't understand the instructions. They may get it right sort of instinctively, intuitively, but they do not understand the instructions that they're supposed to apply. And people's lives are affected by this, obviously.
They certainly are. Another area where people's lives are affected is the global financial crisis. You actually think the absence of plain language had a role to play in that?
I'm not sure about that, but I do think that people didn't understand the documents that they were signing.
Well, let me read something that has come out from one corporation. They wrote recently, quote, as a means of simultaneously decomposing both the optative and indicative parts of a requirements problem from an abstract business level to concrete system requirements, we leverage the paradigm of projection in both approaches while maintaining traceability to high-level business objectives.
Lovely. Lovely, right. And I don't have a clue what that means, and I don't think most intelligent readers do. And, you know, it's so sad and so unnecessary. And the interesting thing about this is not just a matter of poor style, and it's not, in a way it's laughable, but in another way it's tragic because people can't act on their rights. They lose benefits. They're frustrated. They can't fill out forms, and it costs business and government There's literature on this and studies on this. It costs business and government incredible, incredible amounts of money. It's a huge waste in business, government, and law because it makes everything inefficient.
It's funny how, in some ways, if a person was entitled to something in society but denied it purely because of some other factor, people would be outraged. But if he's denied it or she's denied it because of something like this, it kind of seems, well, you maybe should have understood the form and maybe you should have read the form or filled it out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's culturally, it seems, we've come to this position. I mean, how did we get here?
I don't know. I mean, I guess because people are intimidated. They feel intimidated by these documents, but they shouldn't be intimidated by the documents. If the reader can understand, an average reader can understand with reasonable effort, it's not the reader's fault. It's the writer's fault. It's the communicator's fault.
That's the key
point. And the reader ought to be a little bit angry about it.
My word, especially if it means they're not getting what they're entitled to.
Absolutely, or it takes too long to fill out a form, or they have to ring up and ask questions about what this means and how they proceed.
By plain language, you don't necessarily mean simple language, do you?
No, we don't mean baby talk. We don't mean, we just mean language that's standard English, that's clear, reasonably clear, and well-written for its intended readers. And by the way, we mean more than just words. We mean the whole appearance of the document, the design of the document, whether it invites the reader in, whether there's nice white space and headings and good navigational aids for the reader. So plain language is sort of the term that has stuck to the movement, but it is it really does involve all the techniques for clear communication.
Yeah, there's the small print. It's a cliche in itself, the small print at the bottom of the page. Is there a risk that in writing plainly we may lose depth or nuance or meaning, especially with the more complex topics?
We have done demonstration project after demonstration project after demonstration project to show that, no, when you can write in plain language without losing substantive accuracy, without losing the accuracy and precision of the contents, and it's just this is another one of the myths about plain language, that well, plain language loses the depth, loses the precision. But as a matter of fact, we've done projects to show that the reverse is true. Plain language makes things more clear because it lays, it peels back all the layers of confusion and verbiage, and so you can really see what's underneath it. And when you actually peel back the layers, you find all sorts of ambiguities and inconsistencies that plain language shines a light on.
What about historically in your country, America, your wonderful Bill of Rights or your Declaration of Independence? You wouldn't call them plain language documents, would you?
No, not entirely, and that's a fair point. But those documents, especially the Declaration of Independence, they were meant to have a kind of persuasive rhetorical aspect to them. But nobody reads their water bill, to be moved. Right? People just want to understand what they're supposed to do.
47 liters ago, I suppose.
Yes.
What resistance do you face, especially in your field of the law?
You face some of these myths that we've just been talking about, that plain language is not precise, that readers expect to see a kind of legal flavor to it. They may expect to see a legal flavor to it, but it's because they've been conditioned to think that way. I mean, people have been conditioned to think that they shouldn't be able to understand their will. They ought to be able to understand their will. They ought to be able to understand the lease that they sign. And it's just wrong to think that the law is above this kind of plain communication.
I dug out our will, and my wife was referred to in large letters as a testatrix.
Right. Means she's the right. She's the person who administers the.
Oh, now you're telling me.
I believe that's true. Although I'm not a wills and trust expert.
Look, what about the fact that in specialist fields and professions, there is a role for jargon because it's like-minded people are speaking about like-minded topics, and we like to have our own in-house language. Right. Everyone in our field understands it. Is it such a big deal if those outside don't?
It's fine within the profession, lawyer writing to lawyer, I suppose.
Doctor to doctor, juror
to juror. Sure, but not when it comes to communicating with the public. And there's also evidence out there that even lawyers don't understand what other lawyers write. And there's one well-known study done by the Law Reform Commission of Victoria that showed that legal readers now, reading legal documents, read them in half the time when they were written in plain language. I mean, even lawyers could spare themselves a lot of time and energy if of course, lawyers like to complain about everybody, every other lawyer's writing, you know. I mean, you know, the other lawyers don't write very well, you know, but they need to remember plain language principles when they sit down to do their own writing.
And you've actually contributed to the change in law, the way laws are drafted in your country, in terms of not changing the law as such, but using half the words to say the same thing.
I've been trying, yes. I've just recently been involved in a project to rewrite the U.S. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and the U.S. Federal Rules of Evidence, which are the rules that govern a trial in the United States trial courts. And we have that's been a four-year project, the first one a three-year project, the second one, and it's been so far very well received.
Well, good luck with that, and thank you for joining us today. Professor Joe Kimball, the chair of the Department of Research and Writing at the Thomas M. Cooley Law School of Michigan, and good luck also with the International Plain Language Association 7th Biennial Conference starting today in Sydney. Thank you, Professor Kimball.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And it is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. Well, tomorrow on Life Matters, it's our Friday talk back. You may have caught Siobhan McHugh's fantastic series on hindsight called Marrying Out, the Catholic-Protestant divide in Australia. Well, that's what we'll be focusing on, and we'll certainly need to hear your stories, one especially for older Australians there who can remember that sectarian divide. Many Australians were caught up in this. Families were split, romances thwarted. You couldn't get a job with a name like Murphy in many places. I'm James Carlton. News is next at 10 o'clock. It's ABC Radio National. Life Matters.